It is Saturday, October 6th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, our Week in Geek News, and in the second half, your questions and comments of technology. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. During the second half of the show, I'm going to welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything you like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can contact us right now. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offered extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Geeks Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Howdy.
Miles Elam, a Slacker geek and student.
Good morning.
And Sean, the man, Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA.
Good morning.
I'm trying to pump you up.
Pump me up, man, please.
Any man that stays up till, 12 o'clock at night putting in a toilet in their new bathroom. Man, that's a lot of work.
It's a man to be reckoned with.
And then wakes up to volunteer his time to help the Central Coast,
even
California.
Worse,
what a guy.
The cable that connects the water.
That's called a pipe, actually.
No. It's a flexible hose.
Okay.
I guess. It didn't fit. So after I had it all done and installed, I couldn't even test it. It's like building a computer and not having, power.
Well, see, I was over it. It's a good thing I didn't use it. I didn't know that. I thought it was working.
Oh, I would let you know.
Okay, good.
Of course, there's no door on the bathroom right now.
I probably wouldn't use that bathroom. Yeah. That's true. Anyway, technology, geek news, that kind of thing. Ryder?
Oh, wow. Well, trying to get up.
You've been moving, right? So you don't have internet.
I've been moving. I haven't had internet. I've been just totally out of it.
It's the non-technology geek show. So
I haven't had internet. I've been totally out of it.
Well, I have rocket internet now, though. I mean, I decided to take the BitTorrent filtering news aside with Comcast and just take the plunge and try out Comcast.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I have not noticed any problems with my BitTorrent downloads.
Because BitTorrent is legal.
It is. Sure. It just depends on what you're doing, and I'm doing perfectly legal things, of course.
Installing versions of Linux OS over and over again.
Oh yeah, I always download my Linux distros that way. That's the easiest way for me.
How's the throughput on the cable?
Well,
on the cable internets.
I purchased the 6 megabit download version.
So nice.
But I'm getting like 10 to 12 megabits.
I'm getting it.
I mean, that's what the speed tests say. I mean, but I'm routinely getting downloads of like 300-400 kilobytes a second.
I can't speak for his, but when I was down in San Diego and had cable internet, it was
and hated your life. Mm-hmm. Go on.
No, it was about 24 megabits on the line itself. So it may also be, proxy servers, like if you're downloading things that other people
Well, they
are
have
doing.
This weird thing called Speed Boost. I haven't really figured out what that. It just looks like a marketing jumbo to me.
Right,
but that's some sort of acceleration technology.
Sean, are you still on DSL?
Sounds like compression technology, maybe.
It probably is. Yeah.
Yes.
DSL.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting my upload speeds that were my download speeds before.
So. Now you're right next to an AM transmitter, Ryder.
I am.
So DSL is not a really good choice for you anyway.
I have no idea if there would be interference with DSL on that.
Tell me about the phone thing that happened with you.
Okay, so we also signed up for they have a digital phone service as part of the package that you can get. And it's basically voice over IP, but it also requires using your phone line to hook up all the phones
in your
house.
Oh, so they actually have a thing that uses your normal
phones? Yeah, it basically daisy chains everything, and then that all hooks up to
a little box over there.
To a little box that hooks up to the
cable
internet.
Does that mean you use the normal phones?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I had these portable, the new Deck 6 phones that are supposed to be less interference. And for some reason, the technician, when he came out, forgot to plug the internet phone into the wall so it connects to all to the rest of them. And it was working temporarily before, and then all of a sudden I couldn't make a phone call. And I was trying to test incoming calls. And so I pick up the phone, and I hear the AM radio station just right there off my wireless phone.
Which station are you next to?
KSCO. Uh-huh. So AM. I guess there's AM right there. Right?
Yeah, the large antennas. When you see a really tall antenna stack or antenna off the ground, that's an AM station.
So we were just – it took a minute for me and the technician to sort out what we thought somebody was on the phone line talking.
It was that loud.
It was crystal
clear. Well, these phones are actually then powered by the wall, and the actual analog input was floating. It was just a cable that
was plugged in. Yeah, there was no dial tone. I mean, once you got a dial tone, that disappeared entirely. Sure. So I guess the wireless phone was like just – cycling looking for a signal.
The wireless phone in that case is, of course, the power on it and everything is its goal is to amplify what's on its analog line. And when you're near an AM station, every piece of wire is oscillating at that AM station frequency. You get a lot of
noise. And the way that they hook up the phone line, basically the whole house was a big daisy chain on the phone line. So it was like one big antenna, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure. Not so good. Yeah, it's interesting. That's okay. Well, we'll go on. Well, thank you very much, Ryder, for that. Or did you have news? Or let's go to Miles first.
Yeah, go to Miles.
Yeah, Miles. We haven't heard from you.
Speaking of technology issues, many researchers will run into problems, and companies as well, with the patent minefield that's out there. Companies will patent right and left any little thing that has to do with technology. This has run into problems with Wi-Fi networks, with regard to hardware technologies,
Miles,
things like that.
I understand a lot of companies own patents on certain technologies. Why do you call it a minefield?
It's definitely true in software, more so than hardware. Hardware that's usually not even the item itself, but the process to get there. Definitely true in biotech.
Okay, but what do you mean minefield? How is it a dangerous landscape?
I don't understand. With software is basically math and logic. Mm-hmm. And prior to early to mid 80s, you could not patent
an algorithm.
Mathematical equation, for example. It was considered a natural law. You could discover it, but you couldn't own it. You couldn't have.
That makes sense because it doesn't make sense for anybody to be able to patent. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. I mean, that would be bad because no one else would be able to use that.
Right, and more and more as time goes on, the difference between hardware and software is becoming blurred. You have radios that are becoming software programmable.
Okay,
not so much just for stations.
Step back. So you can't patent algorithms, or you can.
Now it's a really fuzzy realm. Yes, people are patenting what amounts to algorithms, and in some ways they're also patenting the business models that go along with those algorithms.
Okay, so why is a whole bunch of those types of patents existing? Why does that act as a minefield? Explain that analogy.
Because with regard to mathematics and with regard to logic, because we all work with the same rules of logic in the human brain follows the same rules, we have the same pathways. A lot of people will run into the same thing over and over again, and many of these things may be considered obvious.
Okay, so what you're saying is if I'm a software developer and I'm making an application and I'm thinking of a solution to a certain problem, my solution, the cleanest way to solve that is a mathematical algorithm that I might come across because it just makes sense for me to do that. And without even knowing that, I've just used somebody else's patent.
Right.
Is that the issue?
Right. So many of these are patented. Unless you are a patent lawyer and spend a lot of time on that, there's no easy way for you to find out.
Well,
whether or not you're violating someone else's
patent. Will this work? I mean, how does this work in the situation that if I write a code and then I compile it and release this product, and there's actually patent infringements in there, what will happen? Some big corporation will assume that I'm running into their patent, and they'll take me to court, and then the lawyer might say, "Show us your code." Or is it only really problematic when you deal with open source where anyone can see those?
Well, open source definitely has to deal with it because their code is out for everyone to see. But there may very well be actually, in the case of software, a lot of times it's copyright. Mm-hmm. But the algorithms may be patented in proprietary software. But you may never know. The only ways that people have seen so far is taking the binary code and comparing it to binary code when it's compiled, say, an open source program. See if there's a difference there.
So I'm assuming that large software developing companies...
That's not the news story, though.
Okay, what's the news story? Yeah, let's get to that.
The news story is how people are getting around this. And if you just follow how someone else did something, you may fall prey to the patent. You may say, like, oh, this is exactly how we did it. And so, for example, some Stanford researchers have followed in the footsteps of Edison. This is from an Economist story. Where he had said, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." Mm-hmm. And so, what researchers are doing is using evolutionary algorithms to say, here are all the different possible, here are all the possibilities of components that could be used to make this item. Now try all of them and then come up with the best one. And so it's using an evolutionary algorithm to come up with the best one. And because they're not specifically targeting a particular path to solving a problem, mm-hmm. they won't fall prey to the patent if it's not identical.
Are they patenting this algorithm?
No, the algorithm is actually open and published.
Oh, that's
and
good.
No one,
that's good.
No one can own the concept all right,
well,
of an evolutionary
thank you,
algorithm.
Miles. So,
or evolutionary design.
Solving not falling down somebody else's path by just using try everything and see what succeeds.
Right.
And therefore,
but
you're
doing
not copying anybody.
But doing it at a very rapid pace sure. because you're having a computer handle all the possibilities.
Thank you very much, Miles. Ryder, I will go to you for your next news story.
Okay. So there was where is it here? The RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, they won a suit against this Minnesota woman to pay $220,000 for having downloaded 24 songs.
Did they actually go to court?
They went to court, yeah.
She was charged $200,000 for 200 songs?
They wanted to charge her $750 a song. Is that right?
Well, they originally had like over 1,700 songs that they wanted to file suit with her for illegally sharing, and I guess it just boiled down to 24 songs.
She felt she should only be charged like 75 cents, something like that. So they went to court, and you got to think about they're really getting you for sharing this music with thousands of other people.
Right.
So
so if 1,000 people download it and it's 25 cents per song, then you're looking at some money. But how was she sharing this? What kind of technology do you guys know?
Is it a web server? She's using Kazaa.
Kazaa.
So kind of older. I imagine this is an older suit.
Yeah.
Since I don't know that many people are using that anymore.
So people don't understand how it works. You download a song, but then it sits in a folder that's shared out, and then it's shared out to a bunch of other people. Yeah. And they can track all that.
Right. So automatically by using the system, you are actually sharing. And I guess that's where the serious money comes from, is when you actually share with other people easily.
But I think the...
Why'd she go to court and not settle? She had a bad lawyer?
She thought she won. She had some people that were going to turn her into, Joan of Arc of illegal downloading. And I guess they thought she'd win,
I've gotten more sensitive about my looking for content. I used to relatively regularly go and find films that I thought my kids might want to see and view them myself. And they're in the theater. So I'd download an illegal copy, view it. And if I thought it was appropriate for my kids, I'd take my kids to it. And recently I decided that that's too risky to do that. It makes more sense for me to go see the film in the movie theater by myself, or my wife go see it and then bring our kids, because I don't want to have to deal with the issue of potential lawsuit coming down the line. And I know they settle out of court for pretty, light amount of money. They look at your bank account basically and they tell you, this is how much you're going to give us. But I just didn't want to get into that environment.
Well, I think that's what it's come down to. This sets a precedent now. People are going to look at this and say, well, if I take the RIAA to court, they're most likely going to win. Because they can call this as a precedent. And then you're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars instead of just a few thousand dollars like they want you to.
Right.
So maybe it's better I just do the safe thing, pay what they want me to, make them go away.
Right.
Now, I'm not condoning her actions. Like file sharing, you are taking material that doesn't belong to you. At the same time, I think of copyright in and of itself, or at least as it's written in the Constitution, as being a limited monopoly and having to do with commerce, that you're not able to take someone else's book, for example, scratch out their name or put your name on it and say, hey, this is mine and I'm going to get money for it. Or for that matter, just take their book and say, okay, I'm going to be putting it on the printing press and selling it. What I'm wondering, though, is this is distribution, but it's not sale.
Right. She never made money on it.
Right.
In fact, she was losing money on it.
In fact, no one does. People are paying their internet provider to be able to get these things. So, and although the provider is acting as a common carrier in this case. So that's what I wonder about with regard to these damages.
Well, it's considered revenue loss.
Yeah. Right, but
these are
revenue
people
loss
that are interested in the music that would otherwise probably buy it.
I mean,
let's
say I understand that argument, and it's a very valid argument. I also wonder, are we responsible as a society for taking care of someone for a business model that may be a flawed business
model?
Well,
no one has proven that there is a new business model that works. So the fact that the RIAA is losing, this money, they're claiming they're losing this revenue stream. Since there is no new revenue stream that's proving them wrong, I don't know how you would argue that.
Except that they're publishing record profits, though. they are constantly publishing record profits. They say that these sections are losing money, and yet they're, overall they're making a whole bunch of more money.
But let me ask you this, Miles. We put this in a different context. If you wrote a book and you had a whole bunch of books at your house, and I was outside your house stopping people from buying books from you by using, you know, slander and things of that nature, you'd be able to recoup your loss of revenue.
For slander, sure.
But in general, if I'm doing that. So the question is, if I went and took all your books and made copies of them and gave them away outside your house, would that still be a revenue loss? And Sean, what you're saying is, well, there's no money being transferred, so you can't even show how much money would have been made.
Right.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Interesting topic.
Would it be legal for someone to, for example, go to the library and start photocopying books?
Yes.
And walk on an individual basis? People.
That is illegal.
Out.
I mean, you know, it's not,
think
you're
about
not supposed
that.
To
the library. Yeah. The library buys one copy of a book, and then they let as many people check that book out for free. Isn't that a loss of revenue?
Well, you know, the other thing is they
and music
can also
too.
Check out music, yeah.
Yeah.
And technically you can go and make a copy of that CD pretty easily.
I really wish
the
RIA would work towards figuring out how to come up with a new model that works for them that doesn't alienate the people that they're doing business with.
Well, yeah, that is an interesting thing, because I think there's a definite feeling that the RIAA is an evil entity. I mean, at least I'm around college students a lot, and there's not a lot of love for this corporation. And there's a lot of new musicians coming out, and eventually there's going to be a different way that people become famous and popular by music, and they're not going to use that corporation because it has such a negative slant.
It's funny, you know, in the technology world, this just never works. Companies come up with, you know, these technologies, they patent them, and then they just start selling these patents. And then they start enforcing those patents, and all of a sudden they look evil, and nobody wants to use their technology.
You know, this whole copyright issue, I recall talking to someone up on campus a while ago about copyright, and one of the things that I was not clear about is the idea of being restrictive on the music that's being played. Let's say there's music all around us right now in this room, and we can play it on air because we actually pay royalties to a BMI, which actually sends money out to the musicians, right? But other people can't do that. And one of the reasons that was unclear to me was that if you make it expensive to use the existing content, you're building up an entry level that there's revenue, there's money value to each of the songs. And because of that, it's of course the money goes to the artist and therefore it supports their life, but it also brings up a barrier that you might want to record your own music. And so it helps to create new artists in the way that if I wanted to go do a movie and I wanted music, it'd be so hard for me to get the music that already exists. It'd be better for me to go find a local band and pay them to do music. So there's a dual side to this.
Yeah.
You know, and I support it to some degree. Anyway, we haven't figured it out.
You know, I was reading this article too that said that if you just accept the RIA's, you know, $1,000 fee, that's just something you got to pay. You do it. If you go to court and you lose, well, then you've just been proven that you've willfully, broken copyright law.
Yeah.
So if you're then owe, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you decide to go to bankrupt, you know, you go bankrupt, it doesn't count.
Oh, you can't. Yeah, I see.
Because you willfully broke copyright law.
Is that a criminal offense?
No, copyright's civil, isn't it?
Civil.
I'm assuming it's civil. I mean, that's the other thing about this is that you always see it as lawsuits. You never see it as the state coming down on someone for breaking the law and trying to put them in jail or anything or even fine them. It's always a litigation process, and that's one of the things that you never come up to the idea of changing the copyright law in these cases. And of course, the copyright holders don't really want to change the law because it's working for them. Theoretically, we've done two news stories. Thank you, Ryder, for that one. It was great, Sean.
Yeah. Let's talk tech.
Oh, sure. What's that? The electronics things?
Yeah. I've been just testing hardware all week.
Can you tell us what you've been working on?
I'm a little tired of tech. No, I can't actually.
Darn.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I understand.
But it's really cool stuff, and it'll be out before Christmas. Anyway, Blu-ray Camp has come out with a way of fitting 100 gigs on a single disc.
Wow.
And making it backwards compatible with their existing players, or so they say. It's quad-layer disc, which means it has four layers. Right now, a single layer holds 25 gigs. Dual layer is 50 gig. They've added two more, 100 gigs.
That's pretty nice. So, when you say backwards compatible, do you mean that your current Blu-ray can read the disc, all of it?
They're saying that's possible, yeah.
It's possible.
Probably going to require a firmware upgrade.
I would assume.
And if you have a consumer Blu-ray player that fits in your stereo cabinet,
you can't upgrade that
firmware. I just don't know if that's going to work. Maybe,
sure.
I don't know. It's all right now. its claims, right?
Would these be recordable as well? Do you know?
I never believe this stuff until I actually test it and say, hey, it works.
Hey, how is the Blu-ray?
Recordable discs. So if you've got a Blu-ray recorder right now, it will not be able to record four layers. You will need to buy a new recorder.
Can you record two layers with the Blu-ray?
Yeah.
The one that you currently have, the Sony, what is
yes,
it?
Yes, the Sony Blu-ray player I have does record two layers. So, but you've got to buy 50 gig media.
Right.
Special media
that has two layers in it.
That has two layers. Mm-hmm. Just a few weeks ago, the HD DVD camp, they added another layer to boost their capacity to 51 gigs. It's funny because they actually made it to 49, and then they added 2 gigs. I think it was 47, which is below what Blu-ray was, and they added 2 gigs per layer. So that four extra gigs put it above
the disc
Blu-ray.
Is a little bigger.
And now the Blu-ray camp has come back and said, but we've added two new layers, and we're at 100 gig. So I really wish these guys would just get together and come up with one standard and just make it awesome for everybody.
Why can't it all be magic?
So I just don't want to buy anything until I've got something that records at high capacity and supports both formats.
Yes.
And it's cheap.
So where
I'm going to be waiting a while.
So right now you're going to buy... So you had a Blu-ray. You might want to buy an HD one so that you can read both formats because you don't have a merge one.
Now there are
And now
players
you have to get a quad one.
Yeah.
So you're gonna, that's three players.
Currently there are players that do... and I'm talking about internal PC.
Right, something that goes on your computer.
That will burn Blu-ray and read both formats.
That's pretty exciting. How much are they? $4,000?
No, they're up in the $600-$700 range now.
Okay,
they're coming down.
There's a good gift for Lyle for Christmas. Okay, anybody? Thank you. actually, what I really want is an iPhone. Miles,
but
how's
you realize,
that iPhone going?
Lyle, if you did that, you would need to buy
media.
No, a new screen.
Oh yeah, I know.
Because the HD copy protection has got to all support HDCP. Yeah.
Ah, so much to do.
Now you can move
on. All right. Miles, you're reading all your news this week and participating in chat through that phone?
No, I can't participate in chat because
why not?
Amiibo private rooms are not accessible through the iPhone's web interface.
Okay, so in any case, your phone, though, you are reading websites.
But I am reading websites. I am reading various news sites, including one that is from the Washington Post talking about infrared cameras being used to detect when someone is cheating at the carpool lane. It's becoming a major problem with commuters in the Washington, D.C. area, where people will put a dummy just into the passenger seat, dress them up so they look like a person, just, get to work a lot faster. And so what the local government is doing is putting up an infrared camera to detect to see if it has heat as though looking like human skin, the heat radiation that we get just from everyday life. But then as I was reading the story, it made me think, is there going to be an arms race having to do with this? Are commuters then going to take dummies that have some type of thermal layer to it, put it into the oven or something like that before they, for an hour before they go to work, put it into their car and keep the heater on so the heat doesn't drop too rapidly?
I think it'd be easier just to take the insides of a toaster out and stick it inside your dummy and plug it into your adapter.
Sure, as long as you have wires going over
the entire skin.
Boat. Yeah.
Just set up a commuter's...
Yeah, carpool.
Carpool. Oh.
No, we're talking about D.C. here.
No, he's talking about how hard is it to make this dummy. Why not just get a friend to go with you?
No,
work?
I understand that. This is D.C.
Wow.
Everybody could drive
Wait. Why are you just dismissing it? This is D.C. Why does that matter? I mean, you think people are evil in D.C., Miles? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. Have you ever known D.C., for example, the federal government to do something that was intrinsically beneficial and cheaper?
You know, when I lived in Berkeley and worked in San Francisco, there's this corner where people stand, right, going to work to San Francisco, and you pull over and they get in your car, and there's these
that's right, you give them $5
They pay you for gas, a couple dollars, I forget how that works, and then it gets you in the commuter lane over the bridge,
and then you kick them out the door,
and then there's a spot where you drop them off.
Did you ever do this?
I did a couple times.
What was it like?
It's basically
like paid hitchhiking. It's very illegal. Because you can get fined for being a taxi service. So
I guess you could. Yeah. It was kind of weird because there's just these rules, unwritten rules that talk, what you talk about and who brings up conversation. And I didn't know them because, I was with another person. That's right. You need three people to cross the bridge. And so we just kind of played it by ear and it was never a big deal. But, in D.C., I just don't see a politician standing on a corner waiting for somebody to pick him up.
Yeah, and that's funny. I heard about people
But they all want to get there fast, right?
Yeah, people paying money in the Bay Area to goes through the commuter lanes, but I was hearing that the passengers were, that's all they did all day was that they
just went
up,
back and forth?
Yeah, they started off in, you know, the South Bay or Southeast Bay, and where the carpool lanes may start, they
and get people are
to pick
paying
them, up.
Them.
Yeah, the people who are driving are paying them so they can get in the carpool lane.
So they
take
can
them
save
all the,
a half an hour or whatever.
Right, yeah. Because the person who's getting picked up doesn't have a particular destination.
All right, so technology fighting having dummies, but nothing's fighting that, and it's still wasting gas, actually, because the person's just being shuttled back and forth.
Yep.
Okay, GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com.
KUSP co-sponsors the 19th Annual Pacific Rim Film Festival, October 5th through the 10th, with free showings of international feature films and documentaries and question and answer sessions with filmmakers. This year, the festival hosts 13 films, including a screening dedicated to the memory of Tony Hill, the beloved local community activist who passed away in August. For more information, please visit the Pacific Rim Film Festival website at pacrimfilmfestival.org.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
You're listening to Geek Speak. We're taking your calls with questions and comments at technology. Rick Philman is waiting at the phones for you to dial in and ask us about anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'm going to do that nice and slow. 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. Of course, if you'd like to send us an email, you're welcome to, but then we won't hear your voice. Just do that by going to geekspeak.org. Stay tuned with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Ryder Brooks. And we're all waiting to take your calls. So give us a call, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Now, we did get an email from Boulder Creek asking us, or an off-air call asking us, what was that? It was from Fred. I'm assuming it's the Fred we know, but who knows? He wants to know about fluorescent light bulbs and why you can't dim them. There's a warning on them to use dimmer switches. And it's pretty easy. It's a pretty simple reason. In these fluorescent bulbs, even these compact fluorescent bulbs that have a little spiral and it takes a second for them to turn on. Actually, they turn on pretty quick now. Inside the little white part that's in the base that screws in, there's a whole bunch of electronics. And what the electronics does is it takes the current voltage from the wall, the 110 volts, and does an electronic switching transformation that makes it very high voltage.
It transforms it.
It transforms it.
It's a transformer.
It's a transformer. But it's electronic switching transformer, which is very important.
Okay.
Because if you had
a
normal...
Yeah, there's more than meets the eye. I couldn't resist.
Thank you. So there is more that meets the eye in this thing. When you have a magnetic transformer, which is two coils, you could dim it. It would be no problem. But it'd be a lot bigger, and it wouldn't have the kickstart that's necessary, the ignition frequency with the spark that first ignites the bulb. So instead, it's a switching transformer. It's basically a little electronics thing that oscillates really quickly, a pulse width modulation. In any case, that electronics can't be dimmed because it won't function when it's dimmed. And you can actually burn those electronics out if you dim it. And when you're dimming, basically you're just saying, currently, normally I give you 120 volts or 110 volts, depending on what you want to talk about. But now I'm only going to give you 60 volts. And electronics at some point is going to come on and go, I can almost work. And we'll try, and it will burn itself out.
So what you want to do then is use it on a dimmer switch, because I do this. And you have to turn the dimmer switch all the way on first to kick the light on. Yeah. And then you turn the dimmer down. All right, so maybe you cut the lifespan of your fluorescent bulb from 10 years to 5 years, which is probably still better than an incandescent bulb.
Do you do this a lot? With a fluorescent?
Yeah.
Tell us when the bulb breaks. I'm curious.
I do go through bulbs. I have. And I've talked about how, yeah, these things aren't as good as people say they are.
Yeah,
I never thought about that. Maybe it is.
Yeah, a dimmer switch is basically, you're causing it to have a brownout. So think of the damage it would cause your computer whenever the power flickers. That's what you're doing
exactly
to the fluorescent
right.
bulb. So unless you have electronics that are made for that.
Right.
Or a device that's
I'm
made
surprised
for
they haven't made one. But the thing is, it's actually quite complicated because Well, we won't get into it completely. They actually have to have, inside that circuitry, they have to have a small thing that gives a DC voltage so that the transistors can actually work. And then, and so there's a lot of electronics going on in the compact fluorescent. It's a pretty impressive process.
You know, fluorescent bulbs are just bad for printed literature, books and things.
Why?
Because they throw off UV light.
Well, you know, lots of times they have a UV shield on the glass. And so, though an incandescent filament throws out a lot less UV light than a fluorescent.
A lot less.
They almost never glaze the globe with a UV filter. But on the fluorescents, they do.
Say that on the box, though.
On the fluorescents, they don't?
No.
I don't think so. I'm surprised.
I've never seen that.
Hmm.
I'm looking forward to LEDs getting better, though.
Yeah, because we all have that laying around.
Yeah, LED bulbs getting better. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I want LED for
can't,
sure.
Can't
yeah.
dim those either. But, well, at the but same it'd be time, easier to make a dimmer because you don't have to step the high voltage up, so you'd only have to produce something that could run at lower voltages.
Or something akin to a resistor, depending upon the voltage, is how many of these small LED bulbs you have in there lighting up. So if you put in more voltage, you light up 100 of them. And if
but
you,
I'm saying that the circuitry still
instead
has
of being
to
a ramp,
DC voltage,
it'll be
right.
steps.
Right. Yeah exactly. Yeah.
Right. But those steps would reduce the amount of electricity going to the
make
light.
A circuit that dims an LED is not a big deal. The problem is that you're making a circuit that dims the LED, but the power, the only power into that circuit, which has to give you your reference voltage and stuff, is also being dimmed. So you have to make a power supply that's a dimmable power supply that still always puts out the same 2 volts to power the LEDs, and then also have a pulse width modulation that modifies it. So.
Ryder was sitting here dimming his LED screen on his notebook. Right. Like, come on.
No, you can dim it. Yeah, you just need to. Yeah, okay. But you got a battery that's always kicking out.
So it sounds like you're dimming it, but you're not really saving power. With the LED model, because you still have to power the.
No, you'd still be doing less current go through there. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It would be less.
Yeah, but less wattage. Yeah.
I see my estimated battery life definitely go up when I dim my screen. So.
Yeah, cool. I'll dim mine right now. All right. Well, we got calls. Let's start taking some, shall we? Maybe if I can do the buttons. Let's see.
Wow.
From Blairstown, New Jersey, Alex. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry.
Good morning, guys.
I kept you on hold from New Jersey so long. What's up?
No, I actually have. I'm calling. First of all, I'm one of your weekly podcasters. And I just wanted to say I appreciate what you guys do very much.
What's your podcasting software that you currently use?
I just go straight with the MP3 file.
You just download from our website.
Exactly.
Okay.
And just use the MP3 player. But I'm just calling. I have kind of an unusual spyware issue. A friend of mine asked me to try to do spyware removal on their computer because they're having issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across something, you know, my normal process is to go ahead and use SpyBot, use Adware. And this software is actually blocking those programs. I tried to uninstall, reinstall those programs, and it actually blocks the install of the program.
When you say it blocks it, are you sure it's not just what does it look like?
It actually doesn't even bother to run the install process.
Okay, right.
And
so
it's completely designated to spyware removal programs because I tried to even go with something that you guys recommended that's a little more obscure, like Hitman Pro.
Right.
And it blocked that installation.
When you run it, it just doesn't start. Have you tried running other new applications?
Yes, and every other application, every other type of application works except spyware removal.
We have a very simple answer for you with a really complicated solution, but basically you need to reinstall the operating system. Or at least that's what I would do. Anybody else?
Well,
okay.
You might want to try some virus scanners. I mean, that's kind of virus-like behavior.
Yeah, but if you can't install it on the machine.
It seems as if it is spyware because the issue brings pop-ups when they normally. I mean, she just completely had a reformat recently.
I went through
the process of looking at msconfig and looking at what's starting up. I'm not seeing anything unusual. Any unusual processes.
Starting up in safe mode would be able to get you up without running this product unless it's a rootkit.
Okay.
Probably is. If it's stopping applications from running, it's probably a rootkit. The other thing I would question is that this behavior seems so unusual that it seems to me that it's possible it's something else. Like, does she have a lockdown application on the computer that doesn't allow for non-registered copies? But you're saying that you've tried other new applications and they run no problem.
She does have some kind of strange, like, Novell networking application that the school put on her computer.
Yeah.
That I'm not really familiar with. But, you know, like I said, it's really strange that it's every application runs fine. Her computer's running a lot slower, and her CPU percentage is really high all the time. So it's, I wouldn't think it was a virus because it's not being found by her virus software. She doesn't have like a commercial virus application. She has one that's like, you know, it's like F.plus or something. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I know.
So it's not really finding anything with that.
Well, definitely try Miles' suggestion of booting up in safe mode makes a lot of sense. And you do that by holding down F5 when the machine boots.
Right.
I think that's the menu, right? F8's the menu, something like that. F5 will do it.
And you're saying trying to run these applications in safe mode?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah. Try one of those applications in safe mode. But it's one of the SpyBot search and destroy one would be the good one to run, because you don't actually want something that's going to install an application in safe mode. That gets a little more complicated. But running an application will scan your machine and allow and show up this thing and modify
it. But also, if that does not work, it's a pretty good indication you have a rootkit, which means something that's patched itself to the kernel of the operating system.
And in that situation, get an external drive, copy all the data off of on it, and reinstall the operating system, formatting the drive. Well, thank you so much. I think that's our first call from New Jersey. I really appreciate you taking
time. That's great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you guys very much.
That was Alex from Blairstown, New Jersey.
So, Lyle, what's the status of our server now?
Well, I got a call. Okay, so you know how we always are installing operating systems and doing all this work and everything. I get a call when I'm at work the other day on my cell phone. The guy from GNI, Global Net Optics, Inc., I think that's what it's called. In any case, this hosting facility that we've had the CEO on and stuff, and they're helping us out, and they're doing a trade deal with us, which is really nice. They're basically giving us hardware, and we add some stuff to our website and add stuff to our podcast, thanking them. Really great deal. In any case, I get a call in the middle of the day, and it's a tech guy. He's like, "Hey, I'm installing your Ubuntu. You want an Ubuntu OS, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Do you want 32-bit Ubuntu or 64-bit Ubuntu?" I'm like, "I think I want 64-bit Ubuntu. Well, how hard would it be if we did 32, if we have some problems and stuff?" He's like, "Oh, it would just be like another day of, you know, reinstalling the OS. It wouldn't be a big deal, but just want to let you know." And we talked a bit about it, and I was like, "Yeah, please do that." He's like, "Okay, thank you." And then last night I called because I hadn't gotten the password information. I thought, you know, if he did on a Tuesday, it's probably done.
Uh-huh.
So I call up the line, and I get transferred to 356 Main Street in San Francisco, which is where the blade's going to be, and got on tech support, and they're like, "Oh, we don't know this account. This account hasn't actually been finishedly set up." And after talking to a few people, they're like, "You know what? The sales guy is going to contact you on Monday with the final contract that gives you the password information."
Okay.
So it was like, it was so great, like interacting with a business. Just love it. Anyway, if you need hosting, GNI.
Being treated professionally.
Yeah, it was really quite nice. All right, let's see.
We've got a new.
New site
design.
Yeah, I've been working on that too.
Looks awesome. I just can't wait to get that up. And we'll have some new articles too. And one of those is the Spyro article. So coming soon.
Coming soon, as we say, year after year. No. from Soquel, Melinda, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question today, Melinda?
Well, I'm traveling and I'm going to need to do, you know, transact business back in the United States. So what I want is a PDA phone combination. I've never had one, and I see people using it, and I'm really jealous. But I want one that will sync with the information I already have on my computer that is in a Palm format, so I don't have to re-enter all the information. And Palm. I want I can use in Australia.
So you want a Palm PDA that you can use in Australia?
Yeah. Does it have to be a Palm, or will a BlackBerry sync with my Palm information?
Do you need to stay using your Palm application?
You're using a Mac or PC?
PC.
And are you using Outlook?
No.
She's using Palm.
Okay. Because I use Outlook, and I do both BlackBerry and Treo. Which
so how would I get my Palm information into Outlook? Does that just...
Because
Palm uses its own desktop. It's not as easy as you think, because lining up the fields properly in your contact database is very difficult.
I can't do that. I'm not... Nothing difficult, please.
Do you have an Excel, someone who's really good at Excel, a friend of yours?
No.
Okay.
You know what? Send us an email. Go to geekspeak.org.
Send us your address book, and we'll do it for you.
No. It just so happens one of the geeks, Chris Dumphy, is an ex-director at Palm.
That's true.
He was the director of competitive analysis, and he is a Palm expert. And if anybody could tell you how to do this, Chris could.
Or rather, our mobile device expert.
Yeah, he is now our mobile device expert.
Okay. So
go to geekspeak.org and use our form up there to send us an email.
Okay.
And we'll try and get Chris to respond.
Yeah.
And help me pick out the
right way to do it.
The greatest little PDA.
Well, okay, so talk about a PDA does BlackBerry, or should she get a Treo? I mean, that's the next question is, why don't you just stay with a Treo and keep using Palm OS?
Right,
Palm Desktop, excuse me.
I guess you need to look at the service in Australia.
That's the thing that's going to be the biggest thing.
Well, don't you have to just buy a chip?
GSM, right?
Doesn't the phone have to be capable of like you buy some type of...
I think Miles is correct in that you need a GSM phone. Unfortunately, I don't know enough about phone service in Australia to be sure about this.
Well, GSM has multiple frequencies, but it seems to me that Australia has...
Yeah, my BlackBerry uses Edge.
We don't know, you guys. We have no idea.
Yeah, my palm uses GSM.
Anybody here been to Australia? Thank you.
But if you do get a, if you get a palm, I definitely recommend getting a data plan that doesn't charge you for access, because either way you're going to be connected all the time.
Right.
And BlackBerry is connected all the time.
Email is the most important.
Okay.
Right.
Looking here at something that Ryder brought up on his laptop, you should be able to use it as long as you have a phone that's a dual mode or tri mode that supports 900 or 1800. Megahertz.
Yeah, the Treo supports that.
Yeah, it's a quad band, the Treo, isn't it?
And
yeah.
Which do you guys prefer, the Treo or the BlackBerry?
Sean, I just got a new BlackBerry, and I really like it. It's got a great screen. Email is really easy to read.
Do you use it as a phone?
My Treo sometimes locks up on me. Kind of does that lately. Ryder, you've got a Treo.
I had a Treo. Personally, I'm not fond of Palm OS, so or Palm desktop,
okay.
But so I'm not a good one to ask. I mean, I would even lean towards like the Windows CE.
Okay, but if she goes to Treo, though, she can keep her desktop management application. It will still sync. It's the same type of it's.
No, well,
it's
she needs running. To figure out how to get her information from Palm desktop into an app that's supported by BlackBerry.
No, but I'm saying is if she stays with the Treo, she doesn't have to do that.
She doesn't have to do that.
But
that's
if
true.
Treo's not, I mean, they're expensive. I want to get the...
BlackBerry's expensive, too. Yeah, I would go ahead and take the plunge and try to get your data migrated from Palm Desktop to Outlook.
And so could I take my little laptop to a geek place and have them do that?
Yeah, you could do that.
Well, they charge you by the hour, but yeah.
It shouldn't take them too long, though, right?
I would send an email to us and see if Chris can help you first.
Okay.
But you know what? If you've got some investment time, you know, money to do this, I would go to a geek shop and say, I want this done and I want to spend only $50 and see if they'll do it for that. If they say, yeah, we'll do it for that, then it doesn't matter how long they take.
And I should buy my little device first and make sure they can sync it.
Yes.
Yeah, just make sure you get a device that you're happy with, that you played around with, and you're going to like the interface.
If you get it at Costco, you can return anything.
Sweet.
And there's always the iPhone.
I mean,
go ask the Apple store whether they can do migration.
I don't know. I don't trust Apple stuff because I have PC. I'm always afraid they won't talk to each other. I know they've improved and everything. But
so I've got a Treo 650. And I've got a BlackBerry 8700G, and if I had to choose between the two, I would keep my BlackBerry, personally.
So there it is, BlackBerry's recommendation from the geeks. Melinda, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you, bye.
Bye-bye.
I love how Sean has both. He just happens to have both.
Well, my job, my company provides one. I would use my BlackBerry as the cell phone, too, but I don't want to give up my personal cell phone number.
Why can't you just have them pay for your cell phone number and have it on the...
Well, I wouldn't be able to transfer it to them. And if I did, would I be able to get it back if something happened? I don't know.
Mm.
It's a lot of people have this problem when they work at a company.
I wish you had some technology people that could help you on that.
You know, I think I probably will go that way. Just because I'm tired of turning in my bill for my trail.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. We're taking calls with questions and comments on technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-KUSP. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Ryder Brooks, and Miles Elam. And we are now taking a call from Watsonville. Wendell, welcome to Geek Speak.
Howdy.
Howdy. What's your question today, sir?
Some affirmative follow-up. My 10-year fluorescent compact bulb give me maybe 2 years before they start to fizzle and flicker.
Do you fade them? Are they on dimmers?
No, that's just standard steady voltage. And also, I would vote likewise for the BlackBerry over the Treo. I'm speaking on a Treo, but I'm increasingly anti-Treo as I use this phone.
Wendell, the place that you have, do you have really clean power?
I do, relatively.
Like when your large appliance turns on, does your house go dimmy a little bit?
Very slightly. We are sort of semi-rural.
Mine does.
See, both of those things are actually causing dimming effects to happen all the time, and that's one of those things. I'm really curious about this whole, you know, these last for 10 years. Is that ever on the packaging as a warranty? Can you get can you return them?
Some of the packaging I've seen does seem to imply that they'll honor it, but I think they rely on...
Because if you're really only getting a 2-year out of the phone, out of that device, that compact fluorescent takes a lot more energy to produce than a normal light bulb.
That's
now, in a 10-year time span, it doesn't matter.
That's
the
not
savings,
true.
Yeah. It takes a lot more energy to produce the compact fluorescent than a normal incandescent light bulb.
Then why do they come
it's
in...
It's more toxic, too.
You're talking... a fluorescent bulb only takes 8 to 20 watts to run.
No, I'm not talking about the running. I'm talking about the creation of it.
But that's only a split second.
No, not the turning on, the manufacturer.
The manufacturer.
Yeah. Okay.
So the manufacturer cost has to be associated with the, you know, the green effect of the device. And so those things take a lot more manufacturing
expense. No one takes that into account, do they?
But they do. It's just that over a 10-year span, it doesn't matter. But if you're only really getting 2 years, it starts to matter quite a bit more. So I'm concerned that if you're only getting 2 years, stop using compact fluorescence, I would assume. If you're only really getting a 2 year. And now, it could be a power thing. It could be that that there's multiple manufacturers of these devices, and some are good and some aren't. But in any case, your second issue was, what was what? I lost it. And
My question, you mean?
Yeah.
It was about the BlackBerry. You were right.
Well, he's confirming that the BlackBerry is
That's awesome.
That's all, yeah.
But Wendell, do you also have a firewall question?
Yeah, I had a question about sort of a segue from the spyware question of a previous caller. You've mentioned before in shows what your suggestion is for good shareware for just a basic antivirus and anti-spyware scans. And can you remind me and us what that is?
Sure. If you go to GeekSpeak, you can go to last week's show, which is the best way to do it. Last week's show was AT&T Sucks and Other Observations.
Right, I just saw that headline on here.
Oh, man, I didn't put it on the show notes. God, I want to say
the title look for this week's show, but later today.
Yeah, this week's show, we'll put the stuff on.
We got to get that article posted. There is a lot of good shareware antivirus software out there. Actually, it's freeware. AVG is a really good company. They provide corporate-level antivirus, but they also provide a free single-license version for people like us. And I highly recommend going there. You go to free.grysoft.com.
But instead of doing that URL, let's go ahead and do the show URL. So right now on our website, if you go to geekspeak.org and you click on shows and you click on the archive, 2006, April 1st. So April 1st, 2006, we talked about Windows trips and tips and tricks, and Sean wrote up a great thing about AVG, and the URLs are all there, and that's a wonderful way to go. So Geek Speaks, April 1st show, 2006.
Excellent.
And the URLs, I think, are still good. Or you can just, you know, if you're
Let's just copy that show notes and move them forward to today.
Okay.
Okay, so
today we'll have, today we'll have a whole write-up on it.
Okay.
Miles, Sean's going to do it because he loves us all. Okay.
One more question.
Yes, Wendell, go ahead.
And this may be too broad a topic and spark long discussion and controversy, but just something other than, commercially prioritized Google-type search engine. Is there something where I can really just find web pages according to their content so that if I were to quote a phrase from someone's, master's thesis or put search terms that have exact matches that don't somehow financially benefit the listener of the web page, that I would get better non-commercial hits.
It doesn't benefit whom?
Search engines that are paying extra money to have their web pages listed. I feel like when I'm doing searches.
Oh, okay. So the Google, so doing Google, but not seeing the. Okay, so Google's responses, the only thing that's based off of whether somebody's paying Google or not are the things that are labeled advertising. So strip on the right, and it's a few stories at the top of the page.
Okay.
Are you saying that those are really frustrating for you?
It seems to me that the content that I find for the terms that I'm using, including all the tricks you can use in terms of adding and grouping and subtracting words, it just seems like the content that I know is out there doesn't seem to be represented in terms of the closeness of the match with what comes up on Google. And I just wonder, are there sort of non-commercial, non-Google search engines that rival it, or is that really as good of a guess?
Anybody got a suggestion on this? I would say that Google's search engine is probably one of the best that you can get, Yahoo as well. And they do not modify their real search results by how much money gets paid to them. That's not happening.
Sure. That's reassuring.
Yeah. But companies are spending a lot of money to try to trick Google, and Google fights that all the time, meaning that if I'm a spammer and I want everybody to find my site if you look about medicine or something, I'm going to do a whole bunch of tricks and such, and Google has a team of people and software that's trying to fight that so that I'm not ranked up.
Miles. Right. Really, when it comes down to it, the only way you're going to find a search engine that doesn't have corporate bias to it, with Google, in Google's case, it's not according to their knowledge or their consent. But the only way you're going to find one that doesn't have that is the search engine that no one uses. So companies won't care about them in trying to game the system, unfortunately. So best case scenario is still probably going to be Google, and they're probably going to be okay.
so I can refine my search techniques, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. Unfortunately. Fair enough. Thank you so much, Wendell, for the call.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. And from, let's see, where are we going now?
A quick follow-up, though, Melinda. There is software out there to convert from the Palm desktop to Outlook. And it's relatively cheap, and I just found one right off the bat called Pocket Copy, but I'm sure there are a few others, and they're for nominal cost. So the software is out there, and it's readily available.
Okay, good. And so Melinda could download that software, pay some money, download the software, and do the conversion into Outlook, and then she can buy a Treo and pretend like
buy
a BlackBerry and pretend like she was always on Outlook. Good to know. Thank you very much for that, Miles. Would you mind keeping that URL so we can throw it in the show notes as well?
Sure.
From Norwalk, California, Scott, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, geeks. Thanks for taking my call. I had a kind of a follow-up to a discussion you guys were having a couple shows back about someone that called and said that they clicked on an email or something and they downloaded some software that said they had a problem on their computer and to click here to solve it, but it just kind of got you in quicksand where you downloaded some more software that was more adware or something. And I, for some foolish reason, I did the same thing. And I used the System Restore to just go back to the time right before I loaded that onto my computer. I think you guys recommended downloading some other software to get rid of it. And I just used the System Restore, and it completely wiped it off the computer. I think when you guys talked about System Restore, you guys also, there was like a question of whether or not you'd lose your data or your files. And I just read this morning, it doesn't do that. It just gets rid of the system files.
Thank you. That confirms from last week my suspicion about System Restore, that it doesn't actually modify the data files. It only modifies the operating system and the applications.
Right. Well, the real reason I'm calling is I have a question, and this is really going to test your geekism, is I have a LG VX6000, and I use a software called BitPim to download my phone book into the computer. Well, it won't recognize the phone. I plug it in, and there's like a beep acknowledging that I've plug something into the USB port on the computer, but it only finds COM1. It can't find any of the other COM ports.
Sounds like you need a driver.
Yeah, I downloaded the latest driver, and it just doesn't work.
And you installed it, too?
Yeah.
Have you tried looking for support on the phone and the driver? Sometimes there's...
It's an older computer, and it's an older cell phone, so there's not a lot of support. Mm-hmm. I went to a Yahoo group, but the last posting was over a year and a half ago. So.
Now this adapter that you have for the phone came with the phone, and it was USB?
No, it was. I bought it, from a third party.
Yeah, it's possible that phone doesn't support the USB. It only supports the serial.
Well,
it's really old.
Done it before.
Okay, it has.
Computer. Oh, it has. Okay.
Different computer.
But I went on and asked me to download. There was some new software to download, new version. Uh-huh. So I downloaded that, and I didn't realize until after I installed it that it was going to wipe out everything, all the phone book and everything off the old software. Just deleted it all. So now I don't have anything that I had on the computer from the older version. And now the older version, nor the newer version, can find the COM port.
Well,
System Restore again?
unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have an answer for you on this. It looks like it's probably a driver issue and finding the old driver, reverting to the older software. I would look for on the phone CD that you might actually have that has the drivers. Scott, thank you for the call.
So, it's only supposed to take care of system files, System Restore.
Oh, good.
But I have downloaded, drivers, updates,
yeah,
that sort of thing. And after doing System Restore, those things disappear.
Ah.
So I'm wondering, maybe they were marked as system files?
I don't know. GeekSpeak
I'm
supported
still
by,
confused by that.
GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, writer. I'm sorry. Yes, Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Sean Cleveland. And answering the phones was Rick Philman. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to take any more calls because the show's over. Thank you for your participation in GeekSpeak. Stay tuned for Castle Cottage with Susan Freeman. And thanks for listening to GeekSpeak. To those that called in, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Broadcasting in HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, or on the web at kusp.org. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP.
Thanks for listening.